ते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Recently, after a class, I was asked about cultural conditioning. Does it affect our progress or lack of in Krishna consciousness? And I said that it did, and I spoke about it, and I thought about it some more, and I'd like to speak about it some more. And I may say, well, these are topics similar to anthropology or sociology or psychology. Maybe these are all topics not outside the ambit of Krishna consciousness. We find in Bhagavad Gita much psychological discussion, behavioral discussion. Arjuna asks Krishna, why do we do bad things, even if we don't want to, as if forced? And Krishna gives the reply. Of course, it's psychology from a very different perspective to that of mundane psychologists. Anyway, of course, our aim is pure devotional service. Ahaituki apratihata bhakti. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir adhokshaje ahaituki apratihata yayatma supersedati. The supreme occupation for all living beings is unmotivated, uninterrupted devotional service unto the transcendent Lord, and only such transcendental service can fully satisfy the self. So that is the aim, and we should speak of that and discuss that, know where we're going and aim at that, but we should also be aware of our present conditioning. Maya conditions us in various ways. So, is cultural conditioning affect us? Well, all kinds of conditioning affect us. Conditioning means we're in a different condition to that of our natural condition. To become conditioned means that we're not in our original and natural position. So everyone is born in various situations according to their activities in previous lives, and they have a certain kind of mentality that goes with that, which is the sum total of their previous conditioning and desires. Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam grahanam evata adhishtanam manaschaiva vishayan upasevate. Why, everyone has personalized sense of touching, tasting, smelling, hearing and tasting, all grouped around the mind, by which one attempts to enjoy the objects of the senses. So that's carried on from a previous life. But according to previous activities and desires, under the supervision of the Supreme Lord and His representatives, we get born in a certain situation which further conditions us. We get born in exactly the right condition to condition us further, according to what we deserve and what we desire and what we are given. So the same question comes up in mundane psychology. Is what you are all determined at birth by your genetic code? Or are there cultural influences also? And the answer is both. The Vedic outlook or the Vedic direction, the Vedic instruction tells us that it's both. And the modern so-called science also tells us. Although in modern so-called science there may be different outlooks also. And there may be also in Vedic interpretation, but from what we understand from Bhagavad Gita, both factors are at work. Therefore, it's always recommended that we have satsang. We should always be in good association, because that will affect us. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. We develop desires according to our association. So, therefore, tyajya durjana sangsargam bhaja sadhu samagamam. We should always give up bad association and accept good association. That's a general principle, but the whole culture that we're raised in, it very much conditions us. And we may not even be aware of that. Just like now in the modern Western world, there's much discussion of atheism versus theism, but it's all couched in Western cultural terms. And even though atheists may want to be atheists or humanists, but they don't realize how much they're conditioned by the whole culture that came out of centuries of Christendom. For instance, just one example, there's no concept of circular time in the Western world, even among the atheists. The scientists presume, the scientists who have rejected the biblical paradigm of cosmology or material reality, they never thought beyond the linear understanding of time that is very simplistically comes out of the biblically based worldview that preceded the non-biblically based worldview of the humanists. So that's just one example that we don't realize how much we are influenced by the whole culture around us. It begins with thinking I am the body. The mistake of the conditioned soul to think I am the body. And from that comes ato griha kshetra sutavta vitai. Especially when one body is attracted to another body, which is the basic principle of material existence. One mind being attracted to one body is more accurate. Nunang pramat, no, what's that verse? Striyapung samitini bhava metam tayaraho hridyagantemaho. That one body becomes attached to another. That's the basic principle of material existence. And then from that attachment, when one body becomes tied up with another body, both literally, or almost literally, and emotionally also, then there is one becomes attached to house, home, friends, family, money, society. So although sexual attraction is the basis of the basic conditioning within this material world, it expands in various ways. And one thinks, I'm this body, I am an, not just a body, but a human body. Humans are conditioned by Maya to act in a different way to other species. And more specifically, I am an Irish body, and especially in Northern Ireland, it's not just an Irish body, but it's either a loyalist body or a Republican body. Now, even religiously, even in terms of religion, most Hindus are Hindus because they were born into a Hindu family. Most Muslims are Muslims because they're born into a Hindu family. Why do all good loyalists hate the Pope? Did he ever really do anything so bad to them? Or is he really such a bad guy? I mean, apart from eating flesh and all that kind of thing, which everyone else does anyway. What grudge have they got against him? Well, just they're raised like that. They're raised to think that it's good to hate the Pope, and especially to hate anyone in Ireland who doesn't hate the Pope. That's more important than hating the Pope, is to hate any Irishman who doesn't hate the Pope. Of course, it may be an exaggeration, but that conditioning is there, that we imbibe culturally. I would say that very few people actually intelligently consider, okay, I was born in a Hindu family, and therefore we celebrate Diwali and Janmashtami and Christmas also, and everything else also, because a Hindu can celebrate anything. But why? What's it all about? Or Christian, we celebrate Christmas. Why? Why should we celebrate? Oh, it's the birth of Christ. Well, why in particular? Why do we accept Christ as the way, the truth, and the life? Well, it says in the Bible. Why accept the Bible? Or even if someone does become thoughtful about what is life all about, they tend to gravitate for answers toward the cultural conditioning, the paradigm that they've received through the cultural conditioning. And so we find generally in Britain or Ireland, if someone is living a wild life without any care for religion or any such thing, that if they, at some point they do becomes more sober and religious, then they tend to gravitate toward a religion that is prevalent in their culture rather than another. So, it's cultural conditioning. What is the truth? Well, different people say different things. Why is it that if we ask what is the truth, in Ireland we're far more likely to get the reply that Jesus is the way and the truth and the life than if we ask in Afghanistan, where we're more likely to get the reply that Allah is the truth? Why? Why is that? It's because of cultural conditioning. We're raised in such a way. So, devotees are also influenced by that. It's not, we may come to Krishna consciousness and we may accept Saradhaman Parityajama Mekam Sharanam Raja, to forswear all varieties of religion, and here religion means just about everything. Manodharma, mental, give up also the mental fluctuations or the platform of the mind on which we have previously existed, and just surrender to Krishna. So that is the aim, to come to that platform of pure devotional service. But we are strongly conditioned in innumerable ways. I gradually got to understand this after some time of being in Bangladesh, especially. I mean, before that I was living in India, but when I came to Bangladesh for much time, I was For much of the time I was there, I was without association of anyone from the Western world, and I was in a culture which was, to a large extent, the village culture in Bangladesh in the 1980s was not much influenced by Western culture. So it was completely different outlook, even though people appreciated, many of the people appreciated, that I was chanting Hare Krishna. But their gestures, even gestures and their expectations. Just to give an example, I was on a train once going from Shillet in the northeast of Bangladesh to Dhaka, the capital in the center of Bangladesh. And a boy came around selling pineapples. So I asked the price, and told me the price. And it was much cheaper than in Dhaka. So I bought them. And then when he passed on, someone said to me, actually, you paid double the price. I thought, well, I thought it was half the price. And he said, yeah, well, in where we, this area is the pineapple growing area, so it's much cheaper here. But he said, it doesn't matter. You should pay more because you have lots of money and the boy is poor. So I thought, well, that's not right. He cheated me. But the other man thought, no, that's good. You gave him extra money because you he presumed I had lots of money. So no harm. So completely different cultural outlook. That's in some small way. But even what we consider to be right and what we consider to be wrong, how men and women interact, how older people and younger people interact, there's a lot of cultural conditioning there. And that does affect us. We see that, the Vedic culture is, although it's a very broad term, culture in any context is a very broad term. It's very difficult to completely define it. But we are being asked to accept a different culture. Now, some members of our movement say, no, we're not. We're just being told to chant Hare Krishna and understand that we're not the body. And all these cultural things like dress, and that doesn't matter. As long as you behave in a decent way, what does it matter whether you follow some ethnic Indian way of thinking and acting? But then, of course, what is meant by decent, that will vary according to the culture that we're born in. Of course, in pretty much any culture in the world, some things are the same. For instance, in pretty much any culture in the world, torturing babies would be considered wrong. But there are some that good and bad. What is good and what is bad? In some cultures, it's considered good that women keep very quiet and they don't push themselves forward. And in other cultures, especially in the modern world, it's considered very bad to think like that. So there's a clear cultural difference. Srila Prabhupada spoke a lot about Vedic culture. Which he considered to be a proper culture, and he referred to the cat and dog culture of the Western world. Cat and dog means no culture, because cats and dogs don't think about such refined matters as culture. For cats and dogs, there's ahara nidra bhaya maitun, eating, sleeping, fearing, and sex, that's all. So, how we, or what culture we adopt, adopt and adapt to. That affects everything we do and our whole outlook. For instance, in Western culture, it's considered strange, if not wrong, that one person would bow down to another person. Whereas in Indian culture, it's considered very good to do so. If the right, it's considered a sign of at least culture, if not a sign of being spiritually receptive, that one bows down to elders, gurus, and so on. But in the Western world, that's practically unheard of, and many people they think there's something wrong. Why should you bow down to anyone? Once, after a lecture in Seattle in 1968, one person asked Srila Prabhupada, well, he didn't really ask, but he stated, "I don't see why I should bow down to anyone." And Srila Prabhupada excitedly replied that then you will be forced to bow down. Death will force you to fall down. You must submit. So if you don't submit voluntarily, then you will be forced to take an inferior position. We're not in control. We are controlled. That's the whole idea in the Western culture. Speaking very broadly, that every individual should assert their right and not submit to anyone. And we see in the Western world that, compared to India, in this spreading of Krishna consciousness, preaching and propagation of Krishna consciousness, that in India people are much more inclined to bow down, and in different parts of India, in Bengal and in the where the Vaishnav culture is very strong, among the Bengali Hindus who have been raised in Vaishnav culture, or a culture much influenced by that, they're always ready to bow down, so much that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur sometimes spoke of dandavat bhaktas, because he said that's all they do. They offer dandavat, it's very nice, but they've got to do some more than that also. Whereas in the Western world, we see that devotees, even though they take up Krishna consciousness, and may take up very seriously, but they're not much inclined to bow down to seniors, or even to consider anyone senior. So that's an example of cultural conditioning. The Vedic culture is, if we are to accept Srila Prabhupada, which is what we're supposed to be doing, it is more conducive for spiritual advancement. So the more we accept that, that's very helpful for our progress in Krishna consciousness. And it may be more difficult for people in the Western world to do. I'm saying Western here, but we could say also African or Islamic or Chinese or whatever. People who are raised in even the remnants of Vedic culture that is prevalent in India today, they are at least more culturally inclined to accept Krishna consciousness. It's more easy for them, just as it's more easy for a person raised in Ireland to accept Christianity, because it's easy to blend in with other people, and because one thinks in a certain way, one's whole way of thinking is culturally conditioned in a certain way, it might seem to make more sense and be more natural to do so. So it really, to go beyond the cultural conditioning, it actually requires, to go beyond any conditioning, cultural condition is a great part of that, it requires great faith and great attachment to Krishna and Krishna consciousness. But on the other hand, unless we practice that culture and live in that culture and live according to that culture, it's very difficult to develop that firm faith, because our cultural conditioning militates against it. The whole idea, the rugged individual, and we don't bow down to anyone. If we don't bow down physically, it's very difficult to bow down mentally, emotionally also, to submit ourselves. Bowing down is an outward manifestation of submission. So these cultural usages, they help us. By bowing down, that helps us to imbibe the mood of submission that is required for advancement in Krishna consciousness. Then we come to, one of the reasons why in Western culture there is little desire to submit to authorities, and especially religious authorities. This is much more prominent in Great Britain than it is in Ireland, where there's still some tendency to submit to religious authorities, although that's been to the culture. That culture has changed a lot recently. But why are people so disinclined to submit to religious authorities in particular? Well, various reasons for that. One reason is that people have perceived that religious authorities have cheated them throughout history. That's there in the Western culture. And in ISKCON culture also, it's widely perceived that those who were bowed down to, many of them are not properly practicing Krishna consciousness at all. And so then the intelligence says, well, why bow down? Because this person's, they may be senior now, but they might be a punk rocker after 2 years. You never know. So chances are most likely. So there are other issues at work here also. Faith, that within the, for want of a better term, Hindu culture, that a natural tendency to have faith in seniors or those who are advertised as religious leaders, those who are religious leaders, the natural tendency. But that there may be blind faith also, and we see in India that often people who are highly respected as great sadhus, they become exposed as being not very saintly at all. And that's going on right now in India. One of the most famous sadhus in North India is under arrest for sexual molestation of a 16-year-old girl. It's not proved, but he's under arrest for that. And prior to that, there were some other things. There was some murder cases in his ashram and some land-grabbing cases. I guess if you live in this culture, you don't know what land-grabbing is. It means illegal, forcible occupation of property and then just taking it over. And just about 2 years ago, there was one prominent, supposed to be sadhu from South India, who was also exposed for being not so very saintly. So that faith that people may have had, maybe in one sense it's a good thing, but then people, they tend to react not intelligently and think that, well, this sadhu is bogus, so we should reject him, but they tend to reject all. Just like in South India, I was there when this, actually his name was Nityananda. he was caught on video doing some things he shouldn't have done with an actress, famous actress. Although there had been, actually, even prior to that, there were reports, and one newspaper brought out a report, even prior to that, And then his followers purchased every copy of that newspaper as soon as it came out. So that news didn't come out. But what happened was that all over South India for some time, people, it was very difficult for us to distribute books because people think, oh, these sadhus, they're all bogus. And then they forgot about it and just went back to normal. So, and now we're getting to the other issue of blind faith versus blind rejection, which is prominent in the Western world. People are, religion, reject it all. It's all bogus, just like myself when I was about 15 years old, when my best friend at school showed me some books. One was Sri Isha Upanishad, and there were about two others. He said, I got these books in London. I met some Hare Krishna people. He wanted me to see them. I said, I don't want to see those books. I know these Indian gurus. They're all cheaters. So that's another kind of cultural conditioning, just to overly reject, blind acceptance and blind rejection. We tend to accept things and reject things. That is the business of the mind, sankalpa vikalpa, to accept and reject. But the mind does so on an emotional basis. So one is supposed to come to the platform of the intelligence. So the platform of the intelligence is beyond that of real intelligence, is beyond any conditioning, including cultural conditioning. But we can't at every second intelligently evaluate everything. Therefore, we have to operate with some basic worldview, which we, to a large extent, we imbibe it. Even though people say that, people may think, I've thought it all out and I'm leading the life, leading life the way I want to be, but we are, to a large extent, conditioned. For instance, in the Western world, there's this idea that, well, everyone should just be exposed to everything and then they can just choose what they want to do. You shouldn't teach anyone any religion. Let them just choose. But if you don't teach them a religion, that's also one kind of cultural... If you don't teach children religion, that's also a kind of cultural conditioning that religion's not that important anyway. And you can't expose children to everything. And they are exposed all the time to advertisements which condition them to become foolish consumers, or just consumers. No need to say foolish, because the whole consumer culture is based on foolishness. The whole culture trains one to be foolish. Otherwise, consumerism couldn't run on. If people actually thought, do I really need to buy this expensive shampoo? When, it's advertised it'll make my hair so beautiful, but we know it doesn't. Or, is it really very important whether Manchester United win their game or not? But we are culturally conditioned to think that certain things are important or desirable, when actually, even materially, they have no real significance whatsoever. So this whole idea, well, you should just train children and then let them choose whatever they want, but we don't operate in a cultural vacuum. The whole society is very much conditioning us to think, of from childhood, to think that, well, I mean, they don't even give you a choice whether you go to school or get their education or not. And they condition you in so many ways. Science is supposed to be some neutral study where you just study, but it has its implicit worldview also. So conditioning is always there, but an intelligent person can step back from all of this and see what kind of culture he wants to adopt as far as possible. Most people don't do that. Or one may decide to leave the world altogether and go and live in a cave by yourself, but that's very difficult to do. And then, even then, one brings one mind, one's own mind, along. So, it's a matter of choosing one's, or considering what are we doing with this life, and then choosing that association, which is conducive to that. So, does cultural conditioning affect us? Very much so. Association doesn't mean just the people we speak with, but the whole atmosphere that we operate in. There's no such thing as cultural neutrality, because humans have attitudes. Even if most people don't think about what they think, but even if they don't think about what they think or why they think it, certainly they have a certain kind of worldview. Just like most people think that, yeah, it's good to work and earn money and enjoy life. So they never really thought it out philosophically, but that's the premise that they operate on. So does cultural conditioning affect us? Yes. And we should understand that the Western cultural conditioning is, overall, it is an obstacle for our spiritual advancement, because it's based on a wrong premise. And the Vedic culture, that is better for our spiritual advancement. Vaishnav culture, that means a worldview, way of dealing with others. The worldview is, of course, that Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. Is that right? Is that the Vaishnava outlook? That's the Mayavadi outlook, right? Well, in one sense, it's true. That Krishna is real, and this world, or our attempt, this world is real in one sense, but it's false. The idea that we belong to this world and we should enjoy it, that is false. So that's very different to the materialistic outlook, in which it's Jagat Satya Brahma Mithya. This world is real, and any conception of anything spiritual is all false. So we have to cultivate spiritual life by hearing and chanting about Krishna. That in the association of devotees who are very serious about Krishna consciousness. And that will change our way of thinking. We in one sense, we cocoon ourselves away from this anti-culture, or this malevolent culture that wants to destroy our Krishna consciousness. We make our own subculture. We have to interact with the broader outside culture, but we have our own internal subculture. So we should keep good association. So there are some points. It's a very big subject, but there's some points. Are we culturally conditioned? Yes. We should overcome that by Krishna consciousness, cultivating consciousness of Krishna. What Krishna culture means, what Krishna wants, what Krishna likes, what he wants us to do, how he wants us to think. That is Krishna's culture. Hare Krishna. Any points? You're just stretching or putting your hand up there for a question? Okay, it's good. Combine the two.
When you talk about association, any culture, of course, association, that's not always the best. And was thinking, to a lecture, before he was commenting on the media, especially television, and its effects. And you talk about devotees, like watching television.
Did I speak about devotees watching television? Not this time. I've spoken about it many times because actually devotees don't watch television. But many devotees watch television. But if you're really serious about Krishna consciousness, then you don't watch television.
Well, this always been making the point that some devotees do watch television, and they don't think it's fairly innocent.
Nothing wrong with all this Maya.
Yeah,
it's just normal. Everyone else is doing it.
But actually,
we had to be more normal, and then people will accept us better. Yeah, sure, they'll accept us, but then Krishna won't accept us. So we have to choose. You can't get prema and also be in Maya. You can't be Krishna conscious and in Maya. There's a distinction between the two. Krishna surja sama maya hoyondaka jahan Krishna tahan nahi. Maya radhika, there's light and there's darkness. You can't have both. You have to choose. Krishna is light. Maya is darkness. Yeah.
Yeah. What's interesting, you make the point that actually that it's association with non-devotees. You're taking the association. You're being influenced, and it seems that it's even more an intense way of associating with non-devotees. Because they have Hollywood showing all these kind of films and the values that are coming across. You're being affected by the values.
Definitely. Yeah.
You're seeing so many murders. They make life seem so cheap. And so obviously, you're going to be conditioned.
Yeah, TV is very conditioning. The three main things we get from TV are kaam, krodh, and lobe. The three gates to hell, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Kaam means material desire. Especially sexual desire, that is promoted in television, in the programs and in the advertisements. Anger is promoted by promotion of violence, and lobe, greed, the idea that we should get more. The idea is put across that we should, a really good person, or they have plenty of money and they spend it on all kinds of things. So it's all promoted. So it's very, television is very bad association. And the reason people watch it, why watch TV? Because it's more intense than regular life. So it's in kaam, krodh, and lobha, they're in regular life, but the TV shows us more intensity of that. Yeah.
You said that nowadays the culture is such that children are not taught any particular religion,
it may be. I think in schools they do have in the United Kingdom. I think there is something religious education, but many people they say they shouldn't get religious education.
There's this outlook that a person has to choose for himself. When he grows up, he can choose whichever path he wants. So how would you comment?
Well, that's also a kind of cultural conditioning to say that all paths are the same. Indirectly, they're saying all paths are the same.
So how would you evaluate, what would be your outlook on this, and what would be your
advice? I just gave it. No, I agree. The whole educational system is just for making people into fools. There's a common T-shirt motto. What do they call that slogan? That I was born intelligent, but then I went to school. Something like that. So the whole educational system is too. According to what certain people think, give children what they think a good start in life. And many people, most people think that every child should get an education. It's required. Maybe it is required in the modern world, because unless you're somewhat educated, how could you use an iPod? I don't know how to use an iPod. I guess I'm not educated enough. I never learned how to use an iPod. But modern society requires people with sufficient technical education that they can operate all the different machines that they're supposed to buy and they're supposed to operate. And we need it to keep our society running on. But no one thinks that, well, why is it running on anyway? What's the purpose of human life? That they don't think at all. So it's there's a defect in the whole culture which comes into the educational system. Here's a good example. I was saying that even devotees, they, even after taking to Krishna consciousness, we are very much affected by the culture that we are raised in. It's highly prevalent in our movement at the present time that we think that to give children education is something very good and is very helpful for them. And they require to have that modern education so they can fit into the modern world. And some of our devotees are doing a great service by opening schools in Vrindavan. So that means that they're helping the process of de-Vrindavanizing Vrindavan, which is going on anyway. But those children, their parents for generations before them would have lived a very simple life in Vrindavan without being educated. Then they get educated and they'll go to Delhi for a job, or they'll make Vrindavan into Delhi with all malls. There's already one shopping mall in Vrindavan and an IT park and all this kind of thing. So, and in the schools they'll also have them chant Hare Krishna. And while they're being taught that you can get a better life with an education. So that's very deep rooted, that you, unless you're educated, you can't have a good life. That's the education that comes from all the bosses of the companies want you to think like that. Just like I had to fill up a visa form a few days ago, and in there I had to write employer's name. There's no thought that I might be self-employed. You just presume that you're a Shudra, that's all. That you've taken employment from someone else. It's just presumed. So it's all part of the culture, just like if someone says, I've got a good job. It's a cultural value to think I've got a good job. In Vedic culture, until recently, even to have a job was not considered good. Even to be employed by anyone was considered demeaning. Better you, as you still see in India, some people, their wife cooks samosas at home and they go around on a bicycle and call out, samosa, 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 and people buy them. And they're self-employed. Better do that than have a high-paying job and you have your own dignity. That idea is there.
How far we can go with this, applying this Vedic culture in the Western
world? How far can we go applying this Vedic culture in the Western world? Very big topic. Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish communities where devotees could live according to their own values. So in those communities, we could start to have this culture. We already are to some extent in all our centers. To some extent. But Krishna consciousness, it can't run properly on a non-Krishna conscious worldview. It's like trying to run Windows programs on a Mac or something. It just doesn't work. It's a completely different system. Yeah. Yes, please.
For everyone can be different, like someone has to give up watching TV or just giving meat to eat or...
Giving what?
Eating meat.
Oh.
But what can be defined for everyone? What
can it be defined for everyone what being serious in Krishna consciousness means? Yes, ultimately it means to fully surrender to Krishna, giving up all material desires. That's what it means for everyone. Hare Krishna. So I'll finish there. I thought I should say, having come here, that to offer appreciation for those devotees who are serving here, especially those who are doing so year after year after year, keeping the service of Sri Sri Gaur-Nitai, Sri Sri Radha Madhava, Srila Prabhupada going on. It's a long, hard struggle, no doubt, but Krishna will appreciate it. That's for sure. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.